Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. All right, so this guest coming up is Dr. Jolene Brighton. She is a naturopathic physician, a best-selling author of the book Beyond the Pill, and a leader in women's health, and truly someone so inspirational that I have found online who delivers just abundance of information and education on women's health. So specifically, we talk about birth control, we talk about the side effects, we talk about clinical research. We're going to talk about everything hormone health, what it means, and getting back to the foundation within your body. It is such an incredible interview and something that is so important for women especially, but also men who have women in their lives, to understand and know about the human body. The human body is always ever-changing. So the more that we start to understand it and learn about it, the better that we're going to be able to take care of our health further into the future. Hi, Dr. Jolene. I am so incredibly excited to have you on the podcast and just educate. I listen to all your podcasts on everyone else's and I'm just obsessed with your work on Instagram. So guys, right now, before we even dive into conversation, just go look her up, Dr. Jolene Brighton on Instagram. Follow her. You're going to want to, but I'm so excited to have you here. And I like to just say, like, what is your mission here? What are you purposefully here to do on this earth?
You know, I actually love that you start with this question. And having had COVID this year, it became so clear to me when people kept saying to me, stop, you know, rest, don't post on social. So these, like, my friends, my family, even my team, they were like, you need to just rest. Don't do anything. Even my husband was like, I will take your phone away. And I told him, you don't understand how important purpose is in healing. When you are hooked and linked to your purpose, like, you can overcome so much more in this life. And so much of my purpose is just involved around helping people become body literate. And specifically, I work in women's health, and that's my focus, is to help women know their body and their options so well. They can't be gaslit in a doctor's office or by a partner or anyone else, and they can make the best decisions for themselves. And, you know, when we recognize that in the United States, currently in 2020, this was just August 2020, these stats came out that only 17 states mandate medically accurate sex education. It is no wonder why we as women get these stories where we think our body's betraying us, that our symptoms can only be managed with drugs to suppress them, that, you know, we're just inherently broken, and that, you know, our periods are something to be, you know, to dread. There's even, you know, people out there that I just call it street propaganda, who, you know, send a message to women saying that if you want to keep up with your male counterparts, like, if you want to be competitive in the workplace, you have to, you know, just take birth control continuously and suppress your period altogether. And that's an option. Fantastic that we have the option, but that's also an agenda. And so I try to be really mindful that, like, we're giving information and reminding women to always view it through the lens of what is true for me. And so as we get into this podcast today, please enter into this conversation with what is true for me, because I can give you a lot of true information. There's studies out there with lots of true information, but they're not always speaking at the individual level, and it may not hold true for you. You're the only person living in your body, which means you're the only one who knows what's your normal, what's not normal, what's working, what's not working.
I think, I mean, that just resonates with us so much. Like, what is true for me? I mean, we love that line, and it comes right back around to the optimal body. There is no one optimal body, and it has to be your optimal body. And that just shocks me when you bring up only 17 states require medically accurate sex education. And then, like you said, we wonder why we have this society of, you know, gaslighting the feelings of all of these young women growing up and trying to figure out what in the heck is happening in their body. So knowing that we don't even mandate when kids are growing up that we teach them the right things and the correct things that are happening in their body, like, where do you encourage people to even start to try and find that information?
It's so tricky, right? You know, I actually, in Beyond the Pill, my most recent book, I wrote about how, like, we get handed these books when we get our period. So some of my friends, they got, I think it's Dear Margaret. I actually never got that book. I got in the library, like, What to Expect When You're Expecting. Totally not helpful. like a little bit helpful. And so it's difficult, right? Like, where do we find that information? That's what I have done so much of at drbrayton.com, is really building this resource, though, that it lives on the internet. It's coming from a doctor, and it's not coming from, you know, someone who necessarily has these outside influences. Like, I try to remain objective in this, of like, you're going to choose whatever you're going to choose based on your beliefs, or, you know, based on, you know, works best for your life. And my job is just to support you and give you information in that. And so it's tricky these days, because, like, you can go and you can buy books off of Amazon. There's certainly people who put on courses about body literacy. But, you know, I did this TikTok video, and I'm still, like, blown away that I did a TikTok video explaining your fertile window, that you can only get pregnant one day out of the month. That is it. Your egg lives 24 hours, and after that, it's no more. And it must be fertilized. And the number of people who are like, this is not true. This is not what I was taught in school. This is wrong. And I'm like, no, but it is. They're like, no, you can get pregnant any day of the month. I'm like, okay, and I explained in the video, sperm lives 5 days, maybe six max, but really 5 days. And then you ovulate, and that's one day. So we say there's a 6 day fertile window. And women will often object, and there's, you know, doctors will say this. You hear lots of people say, well, you can get pregnant on your period. So that becomes very confusing. Yes. Let's say you're having a 6 day period, and that you have 3 days of heavy flow. And then after that, there's some spotting that takes place. And so you're having this 6 day period, and then you are having sex, and you are having sex like 4 days later, so let's say you have sex on day six. Let's just like make it even easier. So let's say on day six, and you're like, well, I'm still on my period. Well, are you really shedding the endometrial lining, or is it that you've got some blood, like residual blood, that you're clearing out there? And so you have sex on day six, and let's say you ovulate on day 10, because spoiler, we don't all ovulate on day 14, and there's still sperm around. Well, you can get pregnant. And so that's where things start to get confusing. But, you know, it's really difficult. And I wish I had like one go-to resource to say like, oh, go here and you'll find all the information you need. I haven't seen that one resource. And I don't trust anything that, like, any textbooks they would put in school. Because the other problem with that is, not only do we have issues with there being medically accurate sex education, but there's only about 9 states that mandate that it be inclusive, whether that's culturally inclusive, gender.
I mean, it's crazy to me, because I think back to my sex education in high school. And some of the things that were said, it's like, well, if you fool around with clothes on, you can get pregnant. And some of the things, you know, it was pretty, it just wasn't very factual. There was nothing that was really telling me what is happening in the body and why. I mean, even just the way that you explain it right now, it helps to understand it. So that there's not fear, but there's true understanding and education. And I think that's a lot of where we're missing information, and where people then start making things up.
Well, and what's interesting is that in some of these states where the teachers are like basically making stuff up, right? And they are telling people like, hey, you can get pregnant if you're like messing around and you have clothes on. No, just for everybody listening, you have to actually introduce semen into the vaginal canal so that it can make its way to an egg that is ovulated. Like, that's how that works. But, you know, we see that those states actually have really high teen pregnancy rates and high abortion rates. And that to me is really sad, because, you know, they're like, there's always this argument that like teens can't control their body. And even if you taught them fertility awareness method, they couldn't control themselves. And it's like, there might be some merit to that. Cause like we've all done really stupid things as teens. So I'm not going to sit here and act like I was some enlightened teen that never did anything stupid. Your brain's not done developing until you're like 25. So like, there's this, like, there basically needs to be a grace period in all of humanity to be like, okay, you're not going to be the sharpest tack in the box about every decision you make because you still also have to live life. But, you know, some of those states, we see these really high rates. So it's really sad to me because it's not effective. Like what they're trying to achieve is not effective. And like this scare tactic of like, you can get pregnant anytime, it goes both ways. It is to push abstinence only sometimes. And it is also to push birth control sometimes. We're like, you can get pregnant anytime. Therefore, be medicated, you know, 24/7 throughout your what would be a cycle, but we're just shutting your cycle down, or abstinence only, never have sex. And I think that there's a way for us to educate, give medically accurate information about your body. And if a parent strongly wants their child to practice abstinence only, and, you know, that's a conversation that I think really has to be cultivated in the home. Like, I, from my perspective, when we present medicine and we present science, we need to have that objectivity there of like, it doesn't matter what my beliefs are. I need to just give you the information as is and make sure it's in a way that you understand it and that you can ask questions so that you can refine your understanding around it. But I don't think that, I didn't even actually think we were going to talk about this today, but I don't think that like, really, the classroom is a place to push any kind of ideas around morality, like how we want to see people live in that context. It really has to be those daily interactions that are happening at home. I say this as a parent. My child's only 7, but dang, I can already see the modeling, the language I use, how everything starts to influence him. And I think that, you know, if that is something that parents want to be talking to their children about, I mean, I had parents that They didn't want me having sex before marriage. That was like their own belief that they wanted. And so they did tell me things that were incorrect, that I could have sex or if I had sex in my period, I would get pregnant. I could get pregnant any time of the month, that like, there have been times where my mom was like, your period's so bad this month, that's because you've been lusting after boys, and like, wow, telling me that was a thing. And I mean, I was now that I'm grown up, I'm like, did she like, how did she not laugh when she said that stuff? I'm laughing right now as I say that. I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. But this was what her mother had done to try to, you know, persuade her. And mind you, for everybody listening, my mom was 16 when she got pregnant with me. So she was a teen pregnancy. So I think there was that extra level of fear for me, mm-hmm, that she didn't want that same thing to happen. But also just to recognize that like, this was what was happening within my home. And like, that is very different than what we're talking about in terms of what's happening in educational systems.
Yeah. And I think that you hit the nail on the head right there when you talk just about fears. And sometimes I think the way we educate the youth, a lot of the time comes from a fear, right? Oh, we'll hold the education from them so that they don't know that this is a possibility or something. And I, even from the way we educate, all the way from high school through the professional realm, like, people struggle to say the words penis and vagina in a classroom. And I don't think that's...
Oh my God, you're so right.
And I don't think that's okay. We had to mandate in some of our classes in our physical therapy, doctorate of physical therapy program, that, okay, you need to say the anatomically correct term because we're not going to be saying any slang terms for these things, all the way in at the doctorate level. And I think so many doctors are just uncomfortable saying those basic things in a room with their patients. So top to bottom, we have an issue with how we educate. And I love how we're going back to high school, because it's funny, in a smaller town in Minnesota, my dad did our sex education, and he's an OBGYN in family practice. But he loved being in there to do all these things and to say it in front of us. And when you said that there's only one day you can get pregnant during the month, I remember my dad saying that from the time I was in high school, like, oh, there's only one day a woman can actually physically get pregnant. And then, like you said, he talked about the sperm and he talked about different contraceptive methods primarily. And I think that that's one thing that we want to get into, is all the research out there on birth control, specifically our generation that's been on these birth control pills for a long time versus other methods of birth control. And I know that you do a lot of research on this. Can we kind of steer in that direction?
Totally. And like, but first we have to say like mad props to your dad, yeah. because that was probably a couple of decades ago, at least, like teaching accurate information. And that's incredible, right? And I do think that like, so I will talk about fertility awareness method, and that is, it is an efficacious method in preventing pregnancy. What I love about it is it's a great way to get to know your body. And so that's, for people listening, that is one form of birth control that we've been talking about here. So it's based on the premise that you ovulate one day out of the month, sperm lives about five. So we have a 6-day fertile window. Some people who are just being extra cautious because baby's not negotiable right now is that they'll extend it to 7 to 8 days fertile window. And you're looking for not just, you know, let me back that up. So because I'm like, you won't understand what I'm saying. So there's a temperature spike that happens right before we ovulate. And so we're recording basal body temperature. That means every time you wake up, first thing in the morning, you take your temperature and you record it. And what you'll find, what I found interesting, so there's, you can do this pen and paper. There's fertility awareness apps, so a fertility app called Daisy, and then there's the first FDA-approved contraceptive device called Natural Cycles. And I actually wear an Oura ring. An Oura ring is not approved by anyone to track your basal body temperature and correlate that with when you ovulate. But I noticed with my Oura ring, I'm like, wow, I can actually see when I'm ovulating. There's that little slight temperature spike. But you're also going to take that data along with fertile cervical mucus and then your signs and symptoms. If you are in the mood and you are like, yes, please come to me right now, like I am very much in the mood, you are likely going to ovulate because it's in that part of our cycle that our libido really spikes and climbs. And for some women, it's like that's really when the peak happens every single month. And so that's what you're looking for in fertility awareness method. And you will use a barrier method when you are fertile, or you'll do something else other than penetrative sex. So that is really, you know, the premise of that. And whether you use that primarily as your birth control or as a way to get to know your body when you're ovulating, how long your cycles are and looking at all of that, I think it can be a great method. Now, you know, with birth control, so often when we talk about birth control, the first place everybody's minds goes is the pill. Their marketing has been on point since like the 1960s. Like they have been just very, very good at marketing. So we've had 50 years, we've had generations worth of marketing. And so we always think of the pill first. And so I want to talk about that. But I want to say that like we have to also bring the conversation back to reminding people that barrier methods are really important. So even if you are on the pill, you're using the patch, the ring, the IUD, the depo shot, any of these methods to not get pregnant, if you are sexually active in a non-monogamous relationship, you need to have a condom. And that's because no method is going to protect you against sexually transmitted infections. What used to be called STDs, I still see people use that term, we retired it because you don't have a disease, you have an infection. It makes a lot more sense. And it's a lot less stigmatizing terminology as well, because it's much more accurate. So it's important to keep in mind that, you know, when we talk about barrier methods, yes, there are female condoms, there are regular condoms, like the male condom. I say regular, it came first. And then, you know, there's cervical caps, things like that. The condom's really what's going to protect you against STIs. So I just said a whole lot. Is there any questions about what I said so far?
No, I think this is great to, you know, continue to go into the one that is the most popular, like you said, has the best advertisement for people, which is the pill.
Yeah. And it was, you know, the first, so people also understand it was the first hormonal contraceptive, the progestin. So from what I found in history, the progestin, it was actually developed in Mexico City, the synthetic progestin and extracting it from wild yam. It was then, you know, brought into the U.S. They started to look at, okay, how can we use this? I'm going to just be real. You guys, like, the pill is not born out of this idea that we, like, I believed for a very long time that the pill, and I did 10 years on it, and I was like, this is my right as a woman. I'm a feminist because I take the pill. And, like, this is about women's liberation. And then when I started to learn the history, that the pill really was born out of the concept of eugenics, population control, that there were unethical trials done in Puerto Rico where women were not given informed consent. They didn't know they were in a trial. Some of them died. That was never reported, swept under the rug. And just to look through everything that had gone on with the pill, and then to realize that when it finally was introduced, and this is what's really sad, is that so many times medicine is experimented on in, on brown and black bodies before it's deemed acceptable for white bodies. And for anyone listening who wants to object to that right away, I encourage you to go to PubMed. It's a database full of tons of scientific articles, and you will find this information there. This is well documented. This is not my opinion. This is well documented. And it was once the pill was brought in to the general population, and you know, with its introduction, you had to be married to get the prescription. So you weren't like you weren't allowed to get the prescription unless you were married. But once it did open up, it was actually the early feminists who objected to it because of all the side effects. And they didn't see it as a tool of liberation. They saw it as a tool of oppression and further oppression of women because it was making women so sick with so many side effects. And sadly, there was a whole trial around this, and it never got addressed. The side effects never really got addressed. It just got rebranded and remarketed. And over the years, we have seen the side effects decline because they've lowered the dosage of the birth control pill. Now, when I say the birth control pill, we are not talking about the mini pill or the progestin only. This is all the combination pill, which is a synthetic progesterone called progestin. It is not the same as your progesterone, doesn't have the same benefits, and then a synthetic estrogen as well. And so with those, this is the original hormonal birth control that we had. And most people don't understand how it works. So if you don't, and you're like, why don't I know this? Well, again, medically accurate sex education, that's okay. So the way the pill works is it floods your system with enough hormones. This is called a negative feedback loop, in which it tells the brain not to communicate to the ovaries. So we don't secrete FSH or LH in the same levels that we would in a normal, like natural by nature designed menstrual cycle. And so we don't ovulate, which is fantastic if you don't want to have a baby, not to ovulate. Because if there's no egg, there's nothing to fertilize. It's about 91% effective with typical use. That means 9 out of 100 women can become pregnant in a year. If you are not taking it daily, and you're not making sure that, when you take it, you know, you don't throw up afterwards. I mean, like, I'm like making sure, but like, I mean, nobody can control throwing up or having diarrhea, but those things can happen. People will often say like malabsorption is not really much of an issue. If you have Crohn's disease, if you have celiac disease, if you have IBS and increased transit time, if you have gallbladder disease to where like you are, you know, you are having loose stools and things are moving quick through your system, it is possible you won't absorb things as well. It's also possible the birth control, the pill, is leading to those symptoms. So this is the moment where if you're having any of that, please talk to your doctor to make sure that your pill is effective. If you take it perfectly, it's 99% effective. So the question I often get is, well, if it's 99% effective, perfect, but like 91%, like what happens if you do ovulate? Well, there's some backup methods. One is thinning the endometrial lining so that if the egg did become fertilized, it would not implant. That's like a backup method, you know, and I want to say this more like a tertiary backup method, because the other thing that progestin does specifically is it thickens the cervical mucus, so the sperm cannot swim to meet the egg. If the sperm never get there, then you can't get pregnant. And so there's these other mechanisms at play, but the primary mechanism is at the brain level and to stop the pituitary signaling to the ovaries.
Wow.
So I kind of want to dive in a little bit, because I know that you said, especially with medicine in general, you know, we always have these initial clinical trials and then we have people take them for longer periods of time. And a lot of time with medicine, it's hard to know kind of what some of these long-term effects are going to be after people have been taking them for like you said, 10, 20, 30 years. So what are some of the things down the road after taking some of these medications that have been found to be long-term side effects?
Yeah, well, you know, the funny thing about birth control and how we just put women on it for continuous use for decades of their life is we actually don't have a study that shows us, okay, so a young woman starts menstruating and she's having period problems, whether it's heavy periods, painful periods, irregular periods. Like, this is how most prescriptions of the pill are given out these days, is not just pregnancy prevention, but for symptom management. And so what happens when she's 14 and we start her on birth control, and then, you know, she goes through menopause and in her 50s, we bring her off, or she's in perimenopause and we decide to make the switch at like 48. We actually don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't know what happens. And this is the biggest uncontrolled medical experiment like of our lifetime, is that we actually have no idea what happens to the female body when we withhold her natural circulating hormones for her lifetime. So that I don't have an answer for. In terms of like known side effects of birth control, and you can find this in a drug prescriber's handbook. So you can get like the nurse's, you know, drug handbook. It'll be in there. You can find this. I mean, this is something when I was getting my nutrition degree, we were taught that if someone was on birth control, how to shift their diet so that they were optimizing their nutrients and to put them on a multivitamin or prenatal. And that's because birth control is known to lead to nutrient depletion. So zinc, selenium, CoQ10. We can also see B vitamins like B2. We can see folate, B12, B6. So this is problematic. These are a lot of really crucial nutrients in the body. And I'll often hear people say like, oh, there's nothing special you have to do, but, you know, eat a standard diet. And I'm like, okay, this is usually a medical doctor. And I'm like, okay, so I know you got like no nutrition training. And even if you did, like, I want to call your nutrition teacher, because the standard diet implies the standard American diet, which we know is void of nutrients. It's usually high in processed food, like carb laden. No, carbs are not bad, but if all you're eating is carbs, like especially like, you know, white foods, like white bread, white rice, then you're not getting a lot of nutrients in that. Mm-hmm. And it does matter. We do have to make dietary shifts in that. And we have to look at, you know, bringing on quality supplements to support that as well. And so, you know, that's something that like we have our prenatal plus, we also have our women's multivitamin. And the, you know, when I formulate any of these things, whenever I'm formulating, I'm like, okay, we need to be looking at birth control users. We need to be looking at people with autoimmune disease. We need to be thinking about like, what if they get pregnant? Like we have a lot of things that are complicated that we need to be thinking about in women's health so that we are offering them, you know, the best nutrients to support their body. Because when your nutrients are optimized, a lot of these period problems, they actually start to go away. I mean, just B6 alone. And just to be clear for people, if your doctor says like, well, my doctor said I didn't have a deficiency. Yeah, dude. Like birth control is depleting vitamin C and vitamin E, but like we don't live on ships. We're not pirates. We're not going to get scurvy. Scurvy is like end disease. It's the same with like vitamin D. Like that's end disease. We're going to see rickets. Like that's severe deficiency. We don't see that. And there is this gray space of like suboptimal. And when you have suboptimal nutrition, you have suboptimal body function. So that's one area. We also know that birth control can lead to gastrointestinal issues. It skews the microbiome. So the microbiome can be affected by birth control. We can have increased intestinal hyperpermeability, or what's called leaky gut. And we can also see an increased incidence of Crohn's disease. So that is to say that birth control is associated with an increased risk of autoimmune disease. And so if you have a family history of Crohn's disease, you've got to talk to your doctor about your risk for these things. And then of course, you know, if we're depleting nutrients, we're going to start seeing issues with adrenal function, thyroid function, brain function. Birth control can be inflammatory in some bodies. So I've done this in patients where I draw their blood. I look at C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation. They start the pill, we measure it a few months later, their CRP is elevated. And so, you know, we know that a lot of bad things come from being inflamed. And depending on your genetic susceptibility, they could be, you know, there could be something more going on for you. So there's, you know, I wrote about this in Beyond the Pill. There's quite a few ways that birth control can affect your body, crashing your libido, increase yeast infections. But again, it's all about what's true for you and what really works for you. And I will say that the depression association that tends to hit within the first year is what I've seen. The younger you are, the sooner it generally comes on. But to keep in mind that your body will compensate for a lot of things and is pretty resilient. So you may be on the pill 1 year, 2 years, 3 years and be like, everything's been fine, but now some things are not fine. Some things are starting to change. Doctors are very afraid to ever look at birth control as an issue. There's like this stigmatization of anybody who talks about the side effects of birth control, questions birth control. I mean, even researchers are like, we're lacking a lot of information about birth control, but I don't want to touch it because I might, you know, I might lose funding in the future. Or, and I think this is a big fear that we all have, but again, like as we started this podcast, we got to stop like operating out of fear. And yet it's tricky is that if we talk about it and we highlight the issues or we get a new study showing us that there are problems with birth control, then someone, politicians, may use that as an argument to take it away from us. And that is a very real threat. And I, for one, believe we should have access and information about birth control because there are, and people are always shocked when they're like, you went over all these side effects and yet you still say there are people who need birth control. And there absolutely are. There, I mean, I worked in a homeless youth clinic as one example. And in that, I mean, these women are at high risk of sexual assault. So for them, a continuous pill, so because they can't afford menstrual products, can be really helpful for that, but also for protecting them against an unwanted pregnancy because they are sleeping on the street.
Yeah. Yeah, that is so huge. And it's important to understand, you know, how to listen to these different symptoms, and if, especially if you are on the pill. And then on the flip side, I do have friends who are like, well, I'm too afraid to get off the pill because then I get cystic acne, severe cramping, heavy periods. So can we talk about that side where people are afraid to get off because it's been helping their symptoms?
Totally, totally. No, and sorry to interrupt there, but it is always the acne that is, you know, yes, part of the post-birth control syndrome symptom picture. That when people come off of birth control, whether it be the pill, the patch, the ring, like the acne is the one that they're like, yeah, like I'm going right back on because it can be devastating. I went through this myself. I never had acne issues. Like we were all teenagers. We all got zits, right? That happens. But it was when I came off the pill, I got cystic acne all around my jawline. And I'm like, I was like, what is this? Like, what do we even do about this? And it is, you know, it's not a mental health condition, but it takes a toll on your mental health for sure. So, you know, birth control can be really, really great at managing acne. For some, it doesn't get better. And then for some, it gets way worse. So just so nobody is like, oh, this is a cure-all for acne. It's not. And yet it can be really helpful for some people because it suppresses testosterone production. Mm. So it'll suppress testosterone production from the ovaries and then increase sex hormone binding globulin from the liver. This is usually when women are like, why is my liver betraying me? No, no, no. Your liver is keeping you safe by increasing that sex hormone binding globulin that grabs onto all the excess hormones. But the problem is then your testosterone tanks. So you may have clear skin and never want to have sex. It's kind of the irony of the pill. So you're like, well, now I never want to have sex. Like that's the best birth control right there is you just never, ever introduce semen into the vagina and then we're done. But with that, the thing to understand about coming off of birth control, and if anybody is on birth control right now or thinking about coming off, you can grab at drbrighton.com/PBCS diet. I'm always a food first person, food first, supplement second, get the diet and lifestyle in order. But I give you a guide on how to really start eating in a way to support your body and to support your hormones. And as you come off of birth control, what happens is that there's this androgen rebound I talk about this in chapter 8 of my book, and it's essentially like your ovaries are like, oh my God, we can make testosterone again. Let's do this. And so they pump out a bunch of testosterone. You'll first see oily skin, and then you'll start to see some bumps, and then here comes. And it's not everyone gets cystic acne, but cystic acne can be quite common. And there can be, you can get backne, buttne, chestne, like it can start showing up anywhere. The other issue is that birth control has messed with your gut. So we've got to take care of your gut in that. A lot of times, if your gut is not effectively eliminating waste, we've got dysbiosis going on. We start to express through the skin. We need to take care of our detox systems. That's not that like you have to detox birth control out. I know a lot of people, they'll write me and say, well, if I don't do a detox, then I'll never get the birth control out of my system. No, no, that's what your liver's for. Your liver's got you, but it probably needs a little more support, which is where we go back to re-examining the diet. People will say, like, you can't eat in a way to detox. But wait a minute, like, your liver requires B vitamins. Your liver requires protein. Like, if you're not eating those things, then you're not going to give your liver what it needs. And the other thing is eating cruciferous vegetables. And I mean, everybody, can you just like eat 6 servings of vegetables a day? That will help your skin tremendously. But cruciferous vegetables in particular, you'll make from it a compound called DIM, and that helps you process your estrogen. For patients that are struggling with this, we use my Balanced Women's Hormone Support Supplement because it has DIM in it and other nutrients that help you in phase 1 and phase 2 liver detox. But it also has calcium D-glucarate, which protects your system from reactivating the estrogen. So you can have these gut bugs, they make beta-glucuronidase, that will reactivate your estrogen, put it back into circulation. Calcium D-glucarate can actually help with the clearance of that. And so if you're wanting to come off of birth control, but you're concerned about your skin, then I really encourage you, one, start shifting your diet 3 months ahead of time. And that's a good time to start contemplating your backup method. Because when we come off of birth control, if we're sexually active, we always need a backup method. So we don't whoops get pregnant right away. So we want to shift the diet. We want to be paying attention to bringing in things like zinc, vitamin A. Those can be affected by hormonal birth control, and they regulate the immune system, help your skin tremendously. Looking at bringing in healthy fats, so omega-3 fatty acids, we basically want to bring the inflammation down and influence the sebum production, so the oils in your skin. So we're not eating. The other thing too, and you may hate me for this, but you got to ditch the sugar and you got to ditch the alcohol. So both of those things, alcohol can raise your estrogen levels, and sugar actually can work on the growth factor pathway to make acne so much worse. So that's something else that you want to be looking at as well. And then coming off of birth control, understanding that you're likely going to have acne, like some. I have had patients that have clear skin, like they make these changes 3-6 months in advance, skin's totally clear. That I wouldn't say is like the norm. Like the norm is really to have more. So I just want to say that because somebody might be like, no, but my skin was totally fine. Fantastic. But I don't want everyone else thinking that's like the norm.
Yeah.
And so with that, you also want to have a plan and maybe meet with a dermatologist about topicals. Like, should you, are there certain topicals that you want to be applying? In terms of washing your face, whether you have oily skin, dry skin, those things are going to matter. What are you doing in terms of like changing your pillowcase? Are you doing that at least once a week or more? Looking at even hair products, that if they're dripping down and getting on your face, are those clogging your pores? So having that kind of plan, and it might sound like a lot of work, but when you get to the place where you have like beautiful glowing skin, it's so, so worth it.
I mean, I could relate to this. I got off the pill probably 2 years ago, I believe it was. And I was so afraid of it because when I would get off the pill, I would have super irregular periods where I would go 2 to 3 months without one and never really knew why. It would be really scary if I was with a partner and I didn't know when I was going to, ovulate or have a period and I wasn't tracking anything. But when I was intentional about going off and looking at my diet, I had gotten my blood levels checked. So I was also pretty diligent of what supplements I was taking, it became such a seamless process. And since then, I'm so happy to report I have had regular periods. But I know that for so many, there is this fear. And so I appreciate you talking into the exact plan that people can start to at least look at and identify what they can start to do in order to move forward.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to recognize, I think it's great you were able to regulate your period. But for anybody listening, if you had a regular, if you come off the pill and you have a regular periods and acne, that might be a sign of polycystic ovarian syndrome. Because in PCOS, one of the hallmark signs is that we have higher levels of testosterone. So to look at that, not as like, oh, such a burden and such a curse, but as like, okay, my body is telling me something. I need to really look at what is going on here. Because that bleed you get on the pill, that is a withdrawal bleed. That's a medication-induced withdrawal bleed. It's not a period. And so often women will be put on the pill and told, oh, well, we'll just regulate your periods. We're not regulating your periods. They're regulating how often your endometrial lining sheds. And so if you're confused and be like, well, that's a period, the goal of the menstrual cycle is ovulation. The consequence of an unfertilized egg is a period. And so we have to start to reframe and look at things differently because, I mean, so we always start with the period, right? We always talk about the period. It's the easiest symptom to gauge, just the, you know, in terms of the set of symptoms that come up with it. Like, you know, when you're on your period, knowing when you ovulate takes some skill and practice. Anyone can do it, but it takes some education in terms of understanding that. But although we always place emphasis on the period, please understand your body doesn't really care. Your body's like, we're here to ovulate. And whether or not you want to have a baby, we don't have to tell your body that. But if we want you to feel healthy, have optimally balanced hormones, then we do want you ovulating regularly because that's how you get all your progesterone. And progesterone is what helps you feel chilled out and calm. You're in love with your life. You don't have all this bloating. You don't feel like overstressed and over anxious at work. Like, it is just, I mean, it's such an incredible hormone. So I think it's just really important. So I'm going to say it one more time so people understand that, like, ovulation is the goal of the menstrual cycle. The period is the consequence of an unfertilized egg. What you are having on birth control best not be an ovulatory cycle because then your birth control is not working. Instead, when you have a period, that's you saying like, oh, I feel like having a period now. I'm going to go ahead and stop my pill. This is why doctors will say you don't need a period if you're on birth control. And people are always like, wait, what? I need to have a period. And yet it really was developed because they, you know, the belief was, is that the Catholic Church wouldn't have accepted the birth control pill because it would have seemed too unnatural. So they put those placebo weeks in to have that week, you know, where you're off and then you have a bleed. And so it seems like a period. It's also because they thought women would be freaked out to just not have a period. And what's really interesting is that that did freak women out for a long time. And then, you know, the commercials and all the, you know, all of social media and everything started showing up with like, you never have to have a period. Mm-hmm. What a bonus in life. Like, I get, you know, when I was in high school, before I went on the pill, I bled for like 7 or more days. I missed school like once a month. I was on the ground with a heating pad, crying, you know, popping all kinds of, you know, Midol, ibuprofen, like whatever to take away the pain. I hated my period. I absolutely hated my period. And I was so glad to get on birth control and to never have to have a period again. And then when I came off of birth control, I lost it altogether. And that went on, you know, for several months. And that was really concerning to me. And then I was like, oh my God, I can't even like have a period. Like when things are gone, I can't even have a baby. I can't even have a period. You start to reevaluate things. And it was, you know, once I got my period back, you read Beyond the Pill. It was horrific when it came back. And then it was over time that I finally figured out how to work with my body. And then my periods just started showing up. Pretty minimal pain, really easy, no sleep issues. I mean, and I was like, man, if you had told my 17-year-old self that periods could just sneak up on you because they're that easy, I would have been like, you're crazy. You are super crazy. Of course, back then I was like eating crumb donuts for lunch and like not eating broccoli. So there's that. And yet, like, it really can be that way. If you have endometriosis, I want to know you to know I hear you and I see you. And I know that like that's not something that's easily achieved for you. But for the average individual, dealing with just estrogen dominance, excess prostaglandins, like a lot of the things I talk about in my book, it is possible to have a completely easy period. It's just not what we get told. It's not what we're, you know, it's not the information we even get at doctor's offices. We're usually told you just need to go on the pill to fix that. And yet you'll have great skin and you won't get pregnant. So it's just so great. And it's like, okay, that is great. And there's a lot more to it. Can we have that conversation as well?
I just think it's so important that you bring all these things up and talk so openly and honestly. And like you said, just fact and science-based about it. And to me, looking from the outside, I think it's so important that both of you, you know, kind of share a little bit about your own stories, because there is that fear that gets preached in and, oh, I hate my period. I need to get rid of it. And then you get on this pill and then there's the fear of getting off of it. And even in while you're talking, you know, you're talking about, okay, here's how we need to approach getting off the pill. Like, how many MDs are trained to be able to help somebody who might start having some very severe side effects, you know, get into that plan to get off of the pill, right? We don't even have that training in the people who are prescribing these medications to be able to facilitate and help people get off them once they want to. So I think that's a really huge discrepancy that doesn't make sense to me at all. And I know that you probably have a lot to say about that too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a tricky thing. A lot of medications are that way. You're taught how to prescribe them, but not how to discontinue them. And it's something really unique. Being a naturopathic physician, a lot of times people don't realize, they're like, do you even prescribe the pill? I'm like, yeah, I have full prescription rights. And they're like, oh, so you can like prescribe hormones. I'm like, no, like I can prescribe pretty much anything. I can't prescribe class one drugs, which are narcotics. Like, we don't prescribe those. Nobody prescribes. I'm like, I don't know anyone prescribing that. But when I explain to people, like, no, I'm trained in pharmacology alongside herbology and nutrition, so that when we prescribe a drug, we understand like how nutrition and herbs could interact with that. We also understand, you know, how nutrition, herbs, drugs can be used together, how they cannot be used together, but also when you can use an herb and nutrition in place of a drug, how long can you give that a trial for before you have to get on that drug? So like, you know, blood pressure, I think, is always a great one to look at. Like, there's so many things that we can do before starting a drug, but there's a time and a place where it's no joke. Like, you're like, no, you have to be on a medication. Like, your blood pressure is too high. We're going to get you on it now, and then we can talk about how we're going to bring you off. But it's going to take several months of diet and lifestyle changes before we're going to be able to get to that point. It's the same thing with, you know, hormones as well, is that, you know, whether it's birth control, sometimes thyroid hormone, where sometimes we're able to bring people back off of it. Sometimes we're not, because there's been too much autoimmune destruction of the thyroid tissue. Heartburn medications, it's the same thing. Sometimes it's like you're not sleeping and you're literally vomiting acid and your dentist is concerned about your teeth. We're going to get you on a proton pump inhibitor. Is this the best thing that we could do, like, in terms of the long term? Absolutely not. But it's the best thing right now for the short term. We've got to get this under control, and then we're going to work on everything else and bring you off of it over time. These are the conversations that I don't see a lot of people having. And it's funny, because I actually had a medical doctor the other day on social media say, she was like, you know, you're not even in your scope to be talking about birth control. And I'm like, how is that? She's like, you can't even prescribe it. I'm like, I don't think you understand my scope. Like, I don't think, and I'm like, always think it's funny when someone that's like in a different profession, I'm like, you know, like, even like with physical therapists, I'm like, can you guys do that? I don't actually know. We don't know other people's scope of practice, like, because scope of practice, as you guys know, is complicated for different professions. But when I explain, like, no, this is actually within my scope, like, I used to place IUDs, like, this is like, you know, this is what I do. They're like, oh, I didn't think that you were ever allowed to prescribe drugs. And it's tricky, because there's a lot of people out there that call themselves naturopaths or traditional naturopaths, and they are not medically trained. and they are not, and so when I say that, they're not trained to diagnose, treat, or prescribe. And that's what that's considered. And so it gets really tricky because people are like, oh, I thought you were one of those people just going to recommend colonics. And I'm like, why would I do that? Why do you think that about me? And it was over time I learned, like, oh, there's this whole other profession out there using the similar terminology. And that's really confusing to the general public. And those people, you know, they tend to stick to more like lifestyle and nutrition practices. And they're not diagnosing, they're not prescribing. So I think that's where confusion comes from sometimes. But, and as I'm like saying all this, I'm like, wow, like, there's a lot of education I actually have to do around that piece as well for people to understand. That's how I approach things differently. And I think people sometimes get disappointed when they're like, aren't you anti-pharma? Like, yeah, we're anti-pharma. I'm like, I take thyroid medication every day to function. I'm not anti-pharma. I have a special needs child with a complex chronic immune system issue, and sometimes he needs pharmaceuticals, and it's our only way of bringing him back. Like, drugs are not always bad. It's how we use them. And if we're always using them for symptom management and not asking why we have these symptoms, that's where we fall into a slippery slope. And you see people on multiple medications, not feeling well. I mean, there can be a lot of issues. And, you know, just to say that, like, that's all that's in your toolkit, that's fine. Because there's some doctors that you'll meet and they're like, you know, that's what's in their toolkit. But to have the understanding to refer, I'm sure you guys go through this as well. Like, just refer to the physical therapist instead of giving the pain meds. Like, after we saw, like, you know, everybody having issues with, you know, too many pain meds, I think we're seeing a lot more of that referral. But it's something that's really important to recognize. And I think as a patient, you need to understand that you need to have a team approach, especially if you have a chronic illness. You need to have a team approach. And so even though I'm trained in nutrition, I used to be a nutritionist, I used to do the, you know, meal plans, diet prescribing, all of that, I have people I refer to that for that, because that's their highest self. That's what they do all day, every day, and they do it really well. I'm educated enough to know, like, okay, we need to get you eating this way. These are the things that we need to be doing. And yet you need a meal plan. You need recipes. You need, you know, somebody to like help troubleshoot all these things. I need to make a referral for that. I have someone who's going to be really, really great at that.
Yep. I mean, I wish that we worked as more of that team aspect and people would really utilize that a lot more. I think we have quite a ways to go in our medical system in order to educate and really allow that, you know. I think it's so huge, and it's important to people to realize. I've even had pushback for being a doctor of physical therapy and people not understanding what we do, how we really prescribe in terms of musculoskeletal injury. And, you know, it can get confusing. And so, I mean, I thank you, first of all, Jolene, for all of the knowledge that you dropped. There's so much wisdom that you have. And I really hope that people take this as a stepping stone to say, okay, now what? And they continue to look. Your blogs are super educational, your book, your podcast that you're on, the information that you put out on a daily basis is just really, really incredible. And you're a wealth of knowledge. And beyond that, you are a resource. And that's a really incredible thing to have for people to feel more empowered in their bodies and in their knowledge. So thank you so much for everything that you just dropped today and allowing the time for, you know, to really just educate our people. We really so appreciate who you are and all of the knowledge that you bring.
Well, I really appreciate you. As we were talking before we even started, I'm like always sharing your videos and they're so, so helpful. And I really appreciate everything that you're doing in the world. And it's so great to see other female doctors out there on social sharing their knowledge. Even though I think it's a very interesting thing. Do you ever get this where people are like, well, why didn't you become a real doctor? Or you're not a real doctor because you're not a medical doctor. Do you ever get that?
You know, luckily I don't get too much because I'm not talking in the realm of diagnosis or like you know, illness and stuff. So luckily it's only just about the musculoskeletal pains that people have.
I always used to tell my dad that, and he was an actual MD. I'm like, no, I need a real doctor to look at it. But, and then I realized he was an MD. Well, so
that's funny. No, just like recently I've had friends. Well, I mean, this has been going on for years, but I have a couple of friends who are DOs, and they're like, you know, and then recently there was an optometrist talking about this, and then an ophthalmologist as well, and a dentist. And it's just so funny. I used to work in dentistry, and the dentist I work for used to get that as well. People are like, well, why wouldn't you want to be a real doctor? I'm like, do you really want to go to a medical doctor when you have a cavity? Yeah. Like, do you really want to go to a medical doctor? Like when, you know, you've like totally strained your groin? No, probably not. There are, you know, it's just very interesting to me how that, you know, that perception of the public, it's really sad to me. It's interesting, and it's just fascinating how people have developed that perception, but it's also really sad to me in that they don't realize that we're at a place in science and medicine where you cannot have a one-stop shop doc.
Yes.
And you have to actually branch out, and you have to see different people, and that all of these people are doctors in their own expertise. And it's always something that whenever people come with that mindset, I'm like, I wonder what you're struggling with, because there's probably a doctor out there who's not a medical doctor who could really help you. I mean, well, I guess if you're doing videos, people are just like watching you straight up, like Jen, people are just like, holy shit, how's she doing that handstand right now? That's me. You come out of the pool doing the handstand, and I'm like, how? How?
I think you touched on something real important that, like, is the reason in a lot of ways the medical system has developed the way it is, and we cast so much doubt into people that have doctor after their name but aren't a traditional family practice doctor, where we used to live in a world where they were the one-stop shop. We no longer can operate that way. And I think a lot of the information you brought today is going to help people start to explore down that path. Anywhere else people can find more stuff about you before we let you go?
Yeah. So you can find me at drbrighten.com, drbrighten.com. That's my main hub. You can also find me on Instagram, as you talked about, at drjolienebrighten. You also find me on TikTok. Because it's always fun to learn with music, and then you'll find me on YouTube as well. And then, as Jen was saying, like all over podcasts. I mean, this is like 200 and something podcasts I've done.
Woo!
I know, it's kind of crazy.
You're a machine.
It was the thing my first grade teacher said would like make me not successful in life, is that I talk too much. And then here I am.
Take that, first grade teacher.
That's right.
That's incredible. Well, thank you so much, Jolene, and you're incredible, and I'm sure we'll be talking with you soon.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.